Kei ngā maunga whakahi o te motu, kia ara te ua tū mai rā. Welcome to Mata with me, Mihi Ngārangi Forbes, brought to you by Te Māngai Pāho and Irirangi Te Motu, New Zealand on air. Soon we'll speak with former Parliament insider Jack Tautokai MacDonald and political scientist Dr. Lara Greaves about imposing referendums on local councils for Māori wards. Engari, hei tūmata I te ahi kōrero ka aro ki tā wahi. Last week, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, Winston Peters, delivered a fiery speech at the United Nations stating Palestinian civilians must not be made to pay the price of defeating Hamas. He also took the opportunity to criticise the UN's handling of the war, saying the Security Council had failed in its responsibility to maintain international peace and security. More than 33,000 Palestinians have been killed since the start of the latest conflict. Now there's fears of a wider regional conflict after Iran launched a counterattack against Israel following the destruction of its consulate in Syria. So, could war spread across the Middle East? And what can Aotearoa do to support a lasting ceasefire in Gaza? Hei matapaki I tēnei take nui whakaharahara. Ko hono mai a honore Nanaia Mahuta, the former Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade, joins me now via Zoom. Tēnā koe te tuakana.
Kia ora.
So, what is the risk of this escalating into something much, much bigger?
Well, certainly the potential is high. For the situation between Israel and Iran to escalate, but also cause a regional spillover. So there'll be a number of calculations across the region of Arab nations in particular about what Israel's next steps are, and there will be quite a widespread set of calls to plea for de-escalation and not to aggravate the current tension any further.
Yeah, I guess what and who will be the deciding factors here? Who are you listening to at the moment?
Well, I think this has got to be seen within the context of what Israel is currently doing in Gaza. And it cannot be ignored that the loss of innocent civilian lives, around about 34,000 Palestinians, the disproportional actions that have taken place over these past few months, the intention of Israel, the fact that there's been an international worldwide rejection of Israel's actions should cause concern, that they do not have the international support on their actions in Gaza. So I think there's a lot of tense and tender observations from the international community to try and have a remedy to the situation in Gaza, which is a two-state solution and accelerate talks there, but also the role of the US, who effectively are financing Israel. They're not participating in the actions of Israel, but they're certainly providing support for the what's happening there in terms of the military actions of Israel. And that's all causing quite a widespread concern across the international community.
Yeah, the latest activity that's happened is the strike on the consulate, Iran's consulate in Damascus. I guess
Damascus,
yeah. Is Iran, you know, entitled to defend itself as well?
Well, Iran will be saying that it is acting in a proportionate way to the actions of Israel. But if you get beyond words, no one can afford a regional spillover and further war escalating in that kind of way, which is why I continue to observe what the Arab nations are doing to try and play their key influencing role to ensure that there is no retaliation, that considered actions are taking place and that there is a call for de-escalation.
Yeah,
so that will be done in a very, very practical way. A number of voices will be exercising their view to have influence on both Israel and Iran.
As a former foreign affairs minister, when how's our government handling the situation? What are your views?
Well, New Zealand is aware that our sizes probably outflanked by our potential to influence in a positive way our traditional relationships and those who we seek to have influence with in the common interests of our advocacy for humanity, but also the observance of international law. So we will be playing our part. The current Foreign Affairs Minister is calling for a de-escalation. I think there is more that we can do to use our voice to continue to hold Israel to account for the loss of innocent lives that have taken place so far in Gaza, the loss of humanitarian aid workers, the inability to get humanitarian aid into Gaza, and the disproportionate actions that it is currently exacting on the Palestinian people. And that's going to be an important element of our consistent advocacy to find a solution.
To your point, Mr. Peters criticised the UN Security Council for failing to act decisively just last week. And in that same speech, he described the situation in Gaza as an utter catastrophe. What did you make of his speech?
Well, actions will follow words. If that is the case, then New Zealand should be consistent in our view. That the reform of the UN and certainly the Security Council to take away the right of veto should be high on our priority list as we continue to use the UN forum as a means of upholding our responsibilities in relation to international law and those of the international community likewise.
Moving now to AUKUS, the former Prime Minister Helen Clark is urging this government to take a New Zealand-centric approach to joining AUKUS as a two-tier member. What are your thoughts?
We've got to remember that the second tier of the AUKUS arrangements, where I last left it, were being explored to see what the potential of that could look like. It was a non-nuclear component. In saying that, I don't think it's actually necessary to join Pillar Two. We can join small and medium-sized nations to explore the potential of quantum technology, of AI, of tech-enhanced equipment for security purposes and things like that. We don't need AUKUS for that set of arrangements, and we should look further afield so that we're not inadvertently trapped into other consequent decisions of the AUKUS arrangements.
This morning, Mr. Peters indicated that the shift in foreign policy towards AUKUS began under last government, under you. Is that right?
No, in fact, we were made it very clear that we did not want to be a part of the AUKUS arrangements. We were not asked. We were told at the last minute. And while we signalled that we would explore the potential of Pillar Two, there was no conclusive decision made by our government when in office to join that set of arrangements, which is why I can say conclusively that there are opportunities in other sets of arrangements with other international partners to explore, for example, potential areas of opportunity and innovation in quantum technology and AI and other tech-enhanced types of capabilities with regards to security.
Are you surprised about the position the government is taking on this or the direction it's heading?
Not really. Winston Peters has been very much a strong proponent of the US and that relationship. When he was previously foreign minister in opposition, and now that he is foreign minister, I might add that New Zealand has never been able to get a free trade agreement with the US. It's not been high on their priority list. I think we need to explore, and I look carefully to the Prime Minister's current visit in Southeast Asia. We need to explore our regional interests in Southeast Asia and recognise that there is a significant shift of global South states to align themselves in other areas other than security and defence, and we need to understand that landscape, because it will have a consequent influence on what happens within our part of the world.
I wanted to ask you about Māori wards. You know, as the former local government minister, the current local government minister, Simeon Brown, has said councils will have to hold referendums if they want to keep their Māori wards. Your government abolished the requirement for the referendum, arguing that rural wards weren't required to hold referendums and neither should Māori. What will this mean, in your opinion, for the Māori ward councillors?
Well, I think the Māori ward councillors have work on their hands to ensure that the value of their contribution around the local government decision-making table has made a critical difference. And I know from my own council, it's made a difference in the areas of conversations like civil defence and response, being able to leverage regional economic growth and opportunity, being able to have community-based, place-based solutions for the well-being of our communities. And we've got to remember, Māori are ratepayers as well. I think the thing I find abhorrent about Simeon Brown's view of the world is he fails to recognise that when local government was established all those many, 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 many years ago, it was based on a franchise of land holding to which Māori collective land holding wasn't recognised. In my area, land was confiscated, so we were never, ever going to be around the table based on the way in which local government was established. And simply put, he's introducing a racist threshold that is not going to be conducive to building our nation and being able to ensure that we continue to look towards each other in our communities as we strengthen our local solutions and regional economies.
I wondered if you could give us one of those local solutions that have been able to come about because of the Māori ward councillors.
When I think about the way in which Māori ward councillors are advocating for the inclusion of their marae to participate in a more formalised civil defence response, that's a really good example. Their marae is public facilities. That's a really good example. Advocating for land, Māori landowners to be for their interest to be taken into account when the LTP goes through its process because of the economic potential that can be derived from supporting, our land trust and the like. Those are all positive conversations, and they have a really positive benefit for councils as they're thinking about wellbeing across the whole of their community. Then there's the environmental stuff, huge things happening there.
Well, let's talk about that, because Three Waters is out and local water done well is in. You know this area better than most. Can it work?
Well, it's hard to know whether a souped-up CCO model that will have to have its credit ratings affirmed in order to debt finance water infrastructure. And we know the numbers don't lie. The costs ahead of councils are huge and significant. So they're either going to account for that cost through increasing rates, which a number of councils have already foreshadowed, or being able to debt leverage against these self-created perhaps regional models. I think there's a lack of detail for councils, and if I listen to the local conversations across my own councils in my own rohe, still a lack of detail. The council have talked about local deals, but no detail around what funding contribution they're going to make or if they're going to open up other funding channels to councils. So a bit blurry, and it's all talk, no action at the moment.
You have probably been back home for longer periods of time in the last 20 years than you ever have been. So you're on the ground, you're with the people. How are they responding to, you know, the settings of this new coalition?
Well, they're not going to be defined by the talking down of Māori aspiration that is currently coming out of the government. In fact, quite the opposite. But that does mean that there's a lot more effort locally in ensuring that the signals that the coalition government are sending do not reverberate in a way that is impractical at home and on the ground. So take, for example, the way in which councils have to engage with mana whenua, local iwi and marae, making those conversations real so that the engagement leads to beneficial outcomes for everybody is where it's at. The other thing is, you know, just yesterday I attended the opening of a diagnostic unit in Fairfield, a discarded community, and Te Kōhao Health, one of our strongest Māori providers, pulled that together because they knew that Māori needed to find their own solutions to being able to test our whānau so that they could get through the door and get access to the types of services that they need. They're going to carry on. And I think that whole fortitude around carrying on, irrespective of what's happening in Wellington, is just the attitude that has to be taken because we've come too far to go backwards.
Tēnā koe. Thank you for your time. Nice to chat.
Kia ora.
You're listening to Mata with me, Mihi Ngārangi Forbes. Hei whakarau, ka kai i ngā take nui o te wā, ko hono mai ētahi mātanga tōrangapū. Joining me now via Zoom is former parliamentary insider Jack Tautokai MacDonald, who's worked for both Te Pāti Māori and Te Rōpū Kākāriki, and Victoria University political scientist Dr. Lara Greaves. Tēnā kōrua.
Tēnā koe.
So, yeah, Lara, what did you make of the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nanaia Mahuta's kōrero there about the settings, you know, this current government settings in the Middle East?
Yeah, interesting to see her views on it and hear her views. I mean, because fundamentally, she's a little bit more of a free agent now, and we've seen people like Helen Clark kind of take that space before as well. And it's actually really cool to have a Wahine Māori former foreign minister take that commentary space or that kind of public discussion, public intellectual space. So really good to see and great that she's doing interviews and talking about this because we often have like Māori underrepresentation in terms of speaking about these topics. And I think that she will be in terms of our, when we're teaching Indigenous politics, teaching New Zealand politics, teaching IR, teaching all of that kind of stuff, we do talk about her foreign policy platform. I mean, ultimately, yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a skeptic and a pessimist on New Zealand foreign policy and the extent to which we can influence as our kind of tiny little country, we can influence anything. However, like I think, yeah, she is right in that we could take more of a position of leading on that speech and kind of trying to take, you know, take a more kind of assertive position overall on the Palestine-Israel conflict.
Yes, and Jack, you know, Nanaia talked about, you know, the words are great, the speech, you know, made sense, but now it's about the follow-up. How do you think our government has handled the war on Gaza so far?
I mean, I think we've been missing in action, to be honest, and a lot of what Winston Peters said in that speech was good on the face of it. I worry that it's a little bit of a case of too little, too late. And, you know, as you said at the top of the show, more than 33,000 Palestinians have been killed, including 13,000 children. The humanitarian impact of this conflict has just been enormous. And, you know, I think we have a moral obligation to show leadership. And to Lara's point, you know, that's always going to be the case that we're a small player, but we've seen, you know, other small players have an outsized influence on the global debate, whether it's South Africa or Ireland or Spain. They've been really showing the moral leadership. And I think it's incumbent on our government to call this what it is, which is ethnic cleansing. It's attempted genocide. We've seen multiple war crimes, and I think we have that moral obligation to say that.
Lara, how could we be contributing to achieving a lasting ceasefire? Are there, you know, could we cease trade with some of these or send an ambassador home? Does that work, or what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, like thinking about that and thinking about, you know, what we do have in terms of foreign policy leadership under this current government and having this kind of mix of roles and thinking about, of course, if Labour had had a third term and what Nanaia Mahuta and Jacinda Ardern, if she were hypothetical prime minister, how that would be different to Jack's point around the sort of leadership and how on the world stage someone like Jacinda Ardern perhaps would have had more leadership there. What we've got at the moment is a bit of like a triple-headed beast or whatever in terms of our government. And we've got Luxon talking a lot about trade, you know, he's in Southeast Asia just talking up trade, really. That's I think where he's more comfortable on that foreign policy spectrum, because it's, you know, anything international relations is actually really hard, really complicated, a lot of history, and people do need a lot of confidence to be able to speak out on things. And so he's really like picking up that trade space and not really like, he's a bit human ChatGPT at the moment in that space, not as confident. We've got Winston Peters, who that speech just was very much read, you know, at the UN General Assembly, was very much reading his speech, reading his speech, reading his speech. which we've seen him be a lot more off the cuff, but, you know, he's kind of got that more that experience and that statesman-like type position, I guess, relative to what he is in our domestic politics. And then we've got David Seymour coming out anti-Iran. So it's a little bit muddled, a little bit mixed. In terms of what we could be doing, it's hard to figure out what realistically the sort of triple-headed leadership monster would be doing and what they would realistically do aligned with that kind of mix of ideologies and personalities there.
Jack, it was interesting that this morning Winston Peters suggested that it was actually the last government that was moving the foreign affairs settings towards AUKUS. Nanaia Mahuta disagrees.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting to hear that from Nanaia, because I think there is some truth actually to what Winston said. She's totally right that they hadn't made any decisions on AUKUS, but even the fact that they are exploring it, and you know, there have been a number of shifts in foreign policy over the past 5 years that towards the United States, and you know, Jacinda Ardern's government did play a role in that, but we're seeing that turbocharged under this current government. And I think we should be deeply concerned about it, because, you know, it really does threaten our independent stance as a leader in the South Pacific, and, you know, our ability to kind of stay out of the imperial posturing that we see between the United States and China. When you look at AUKUS Pillar 2, as Nanaia said, it's a non-nuclear agreement, but even within that, you know, the sharing of weapons technology, I fear the prospect of things like us providing data and targeting to the United States when they, you know, are dropping missiles and using these new kinds of modern warfare tactics. And then, you know, despite what she said around the nuclear element, the Pillar 1 does still threaten us, and the nuclear non-proliferation treaty more globally too, because Australia has taken the decision to purchase nuclear-powered submarines. So really the region is threatened and becomes more unstable when we side so explicitly with one imperial power, in this case the United States.
We spoke to Nanaia Mahuta about a number of her policies and legislations that have been undone, and, you know, Māori Wards is one under her local government, and Three Waters. Interesting, you know, she raised a couple of examples of how the Māori Wards are starting to work towards civil defence outcomes, Lara. Do we expect to see those fall away, do you think?
Well, look, honestly, in that initial coalition agreement, the Māori Wards referendums, that was the biggest kind of blow to me as someone who studies political participation in Māori politics and government, local government and all that kind of thing. That was the biggest blow to me, because I can see that this is going to turn into like a huge bummer of a time for the country and a huge bummer of a time for Māori. Like, it's not going to be a positive thing. And also, I think that fundamentally it's going to be undone long term. Their undoing of Mahuta's policy will get undone long term, because that's just the way that political attitudes are going, and our demography in Aotearoa is going as well. A huge kind of wave of Māori aging into voting. So it's that's a really strange one for me. And I think that fundamentally, though, one of the things that I've learned about Māori politics and history is that Māori will find a way to make things happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, fundamentally, we'll use systems, we'll figure out some way to try to make positive inroads in things like that civil defence space. Mm-hmm. Like, I have confidence in our communities that they can do that, but, you know, we've got to deal with this whole wave of, like, these racist referendums that we're going to have to all deal with coming up, and that's not a positive.
Yeah, Jack, you know, you're no longer in Wellington after many, many years down there, and you've shifted home. What are your thoughts as somebody who's actually, you know, in a smaller community where Māori are up on their feet, many are post-settlement and working alongside local council?
Well, interestingly, in my area in Kapiti, our mana whenua are quite opposed to Māori Wards, and so that's part of the reason why they haven't happened yet, because they are in favour of a more direct negotiation and iwi representation on the council. And I think what that speaks to is the importance of, you know, a multifaceted approach to local government, that we actually need to try and engage on all levels. We need to try and secure these Māori Wards. We need to try and strengthen iwi representation on councils. And, you know, to Lara's point, this is going to be a dark time because, you know, the government has, or the National Party has said that they won't go ahead with David Seymour's referendum on the Treaty Principles Bill. But, you know, we're actually going to see the effect of it with these Māori ward referendums. And, you know, it's really going to drive that culture war that Seymour so desperately wants, and is really going to fuel racism at a local level right across the country. So it is incredibly disappointing, and it shows that we really need to mobilise. And I think, as Nanaia was doing, talk about the impact of Māori wards in a positive way, and keep the high ground in that sense, because, you know, as Lara says, it is going to be, we are going to secure Māori representation in local government in the long term. And I think this is an unfortunate blip in the ongoing path towards that.
Tēnā kōrua, ko pau te wā ki a tātou. Hoi nō, e mihi ana ki a kōrua.
Kia ora.
Tai pari, tai temu, ko te tai o mihi mai o hā, ka reri tonu rā ki a koutou. E aku whakateitei, tēnā koutou katoa. Ka nui hoki te whakaute ki te māngai pāho me irirangi te motu. Nā rāua, tēnei hōtaka i taunaki. We'll be back in a fortnight. Nō horo mai.